Monday, July 30th, 2018. This is LA Podcast. Scott Frazier, Alyssa Walker. You're going to take a, this has to be a big one for you because you're going to take a little break after this, right?
Yeah,
you're
it's been too overwhelming. I need to take a break.
Just the new celebrity.
Just, well,
I warned you.
Like the people's appetite for LA-based politics and local news is just, it's huge.
I saw, the weight is crushing. Did you see people saying, Scott, a lot of people tweeting at Alyssa saying, you guys really found the formula.
Yeah, I did.
And it's like, oh, thanks a fucking lot. At least don't CC me on this.
I did not find that offensive at all.
The last time you said I was like part of the furniture, and that made me really... I was like, okay, I'm in the ottoman of the podcast.
That's the formula.
A much nicer piece of furniture.
The next time you have a tweet idea and it's like, hey guys, you discovered that 0 + 0 + 1 = 1. Don't.
That's the formula.
At Hayes and I, just leave us. Just tweet that to Alyssa.
So we have a lot of stuff to catch up on from last week, a lot of follow-up. We talked about last week there was a shootout at Trader Joe's between someone who had shot his grandmother and girlfriend in South LA, was chased by police to the Silver Lake Trader Joe's. It was national news. And one woman, a manager of the store, Melita Corrado, was killed in the shootout. There was a lot of speculation at the time over whether the bullet had been shot by the gunman or by LAPD officers. Press conference on Tuesday, Chief Michael Moore came out and said that it was the bullet was fired by an officer. A lot of people were criticizing that language. They want to say that she was shot by the officer.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was basically what the language was that was used in papers. The headline being some variant of Melita Corrado was killed by a police bullet, you know. So,
yes.
So very passive, very depersonalized. And Michael Moore in his statements was very reluctant to... make any cut. I mean, we have to take into account the fact that he's been on the job now for 2 or 3 weeks as of the time of this press conference, and he was very reluctant to place any kind of judgment on the actual action of returning fire in front of a crowded store.
I mean, I would actually say that he placed the positive judgment on it. That is basically what the officers had to do in that moment. I went kind of crazy when he did this press conference. Yeah. I was very upset. He was basically signing off on the fact that officers had fired into a crowded grocery store. When the stats are that like police officers miss about 60% of the shots that they take. And so they just, I would think that there would be more caution applied to what's around them when they're shooting a gun. But he said in these exact words that they did what they had to do to protect the people in the store.
Yeah. And actually, to me, it was kind of not a good look to say, like, they did a really good job protecting themselves. But when, I mean... they did protect themselves, but I don't know how you can say they did a good job protecting themselves when somebody actually got killed in the process of them defending themselves.
But the chief got a lot of support. The Times editorial board praised him for not hiding the body camera videos, essentially, and for coming out right away with the press conference.
That part was good. I mean, it was very quick. That usually these things take a long time and... maybe could also be, you know, be part of like a longer investigation. And the fact that they just put those videos out, although it was strange at the press conference, they played two videos, dash cam and body cam. And then he was like, oh, those are the wrong videos. There's actually another video we want you to see that shows more information.
It was, I think it was like the immediate aftermath of them getting out of the car.
Yeah,
actually released, I think, more than they intended to on Tuesday.
So that was, I mean, that part of it, I think, was good to give people at least the information so they could try to see. But I do agree that he was trying to put the videos out to have people understand that maybe they felt their lives were in danger, or they felt other people's lives are in danger, to show the volatility, I guess, of the situation.
Sure.
That was his goal.
I mean, coming out with the videos right away, I think I was also expecting it to take a lot longer. I thought there would be this very drawn out investigation, mm-hmm. even though obviously this with the ballistics they can do, it wouldn't be that hard to figure out. I would say that drawing it out is bad and releasing the videos as soon as you know the information is normal.
Yeah.
Rather than good. This, the bar is very low.
The bar is very low
For these things.
I also, in terms of the handling of it, I guess, so as I said earlier, he just started in this capacity, but really whether something like this happens 2 weeks or a year or however many years after you start in this position, this is the position, LAPD chief, this is the position that he wanted. It's not like the statistical analysis that he was being hyped up for being
right.
very good at before yeah. the job. It's really not that.
No.
This is LA. It is a city that has a tenuous relationship, generally speaking, with its law enforcement entities, and that requires a very savvy caretaker to actually make sure that that relationship can proceed in a productive way. And so I don't personally feel like he handled this great. I felt like when reporters were asking him, how do you actually feel about whether or not it is responsible for your officers to get out of the car when they're being fired upon and start just shooting in an area where there are just people, as he said, milling about, you know, they're grocery shopping. I think that his response, which was essentially to go back to South LA and say, we were dealing with an individual who had shot his grandmother, shot so-and-so, and so, like, what were our officers essentially supposed to do? And from my mind, what good could possibly have come from that? I think that the potential to actually improve the situation by returning fire in the situation they were in was very bad. As I said last week, I think being in that kind of high-speed pursuit where somebody's firing in the middle of the street is also dangerous.
And yeah, it's amazing that no one was killed
at that point.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
There's something that bothered me about what he said in his statement, too. It was like, we live in a violent city or something.
A violent
like
world.
Yeah. Wait, yeah. I mean, yeah. I hate when people say that.
Me, too.
I mean, that's like, and that gets said a lot, I think, lately, and often by like Republicans, actually.
Yeah,
you know, it's
yeah,
like
absolutely.
Oh, this is a dangerous place, we need, you know, protection.
Yeah,
and
it's a huge,
as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. What were you gonna say?
It's a cop-out. Maybe that's where that term comes from.
To me, this is a problem of two deadly weapons, a car and a gun,
yeah.
which are both killing the same amount of people in this city of ours, of Los Angeles,
right?
And I agree with you that there was no moment where you could really see that it was in any way that force needed to be used in that way, I guess. I mean, to stop the car. Like, I don't understand even how they can trace a car by LoJack technology and not just turn off the car. Like, why don't we have something like that? Like, when does that exist? If with like a stolen car, or somebody like behind the wheel who shouldn't be behind the wheel. I mean, to
we
me,
do it
it's
for phones. We can.
I'm
like,
sure. Yeah, you can.
Phones.
Yeah, you can break your phone, break your car. But to me, this is just a bigger problem of deciding when to intervene on these high speed crashes, deciding when to intervene on these high speed chases, and allowing people to use cars in this way as like a mass murder weapon, which could have been that. It could have been what happened,
right?
Too. And like, were they right to engage him to like chase them through the city? So to me, it's just it gets more and more complicated, and especially when there's a car involved, I get really sensitive about it. And the violent society, really, just that quote kind of threw me off.
He also this seems like a nitpick, but he pronounced Melita Corrado's name wrong.
Yeah.
He called her Melita Corrado.
I don't think that's a nitpick, by
there's
the way.
Well, in this situation, when your officers have shot an innocent person, I think there's a certain level of attention you should pay to honoring that person's memory. And
yeah.
The baseline is just saying her name right. And also playing the wrong video, things like that. I mean, it's such an important moment. And I guess you could say they wanted to come out with it so quickly before the news broke.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also like vague that it was going to be even about that. You had to know.
Yeah.
It was like, officer involved shooting in Northeast Division.
LA. Yeah.
Press conference, and you're like, okay, I think it's in Northeast Division. Like, to me, I had to like put it together before I realized that's what it was. Yeah. So.
But there was a memorial for Melita Corrado on Wednesday night in the Trader Joe's parking lot that I went to. That was really beautiful. All the employees of the Trader Joe's that she used to work for at Toluca Lake were there. They shut down the store so they could all come over. A lot of like all of her coworkers and the Silver Lake Trader Joe's. She'd only been there for 2 weeks.
Oh yeah.
But they still all came out. That was really lovely. There's a GoFundMe for her memory that's up if you just Google her name, and there are tons of articles about it. We also want to talk about Ref Rodriguez. We predicted.
I know. We predicted a lot of things last week.
I know,
it's kind
based
of amazing.
On other people's reporting.
Well, that and are very, I mean, maybe mine, but I think those what some of those tweets were about. Go on.
Ref Rodriguez, the school board member for LAUSD District 5, resigned.
Ref Rod.
First thing Monday morning. He's Ref out. Rod is out. He improperly financed his own campaign. Very avoidable mistake. He just wanted to simulate grassroots support for his campaign. It was over $26,000. Doesn't seem necessarily worth it, but he had a lot of other stuff going on too. This feels a little like the Al Capone tax evasion thing to me.
Yeah, the mental image of him just like kind of like pulling a check out of a hat and being like, oh wow, this is for me? This $1,000 check.
Thank
people
you.
Love me. They just really want
he
me.
He did
to...
go around saying that. He's like, well, you can see from all my small donations.
Yeah.
My $26,000 donations, how much support there is for me in the community. But he stepped down, and now there's this total clusterfuck.
They have 60 days to vote. The school board, that is, has 60 days to vote on what it is they're going to do. We had no idea how this worked last week, but
yes.
KPCC had a very helpful explainer of what was going on.
Yeah, Kyle Stokes at KPCC narrowed it down to there's four possibilities for what could happen. All of them involve school board votes, and the school board is now deadlocked at 3-3. So there is, I'm sure, some kind of nuclear option if they just can't agree on what to do next. But it seems like the best option is just to have a special election at this point.
If they actually do have a special election, which Times editorial board said that they should do, seems like there's probably going the teachers' unions, SEIU, UTLA, all of the unions are going to strongly support having a special election. If they do that, it's very unlikely that that will actually happen in November. That will probably be in spring, in March.
That's interesting. That's a really long time.
That's a really long
Such
time
a
from
long
now.
Time.
And I want to vote. I want to, you know, it gives us something
and
to talk about.
And who chooses the month when these special elections are going to happen anyway? March? Since when is that a election?
That's when, I don't know. That's when Measure S was.
Yeah, that's when it was last year. I'm trying to think of. But then there were other special. I mean, the whole point was we were going to condense these into fewer dates, and now it's endless.
Yeah,
we just
have it more. Never, that's right. Never.
That's right. It would be like, oh well, just when you're voting for president, you'll vote on all your LA local officials, and now you just vote every like 2 weeks. I want to take us to Scott's Twitter feed. I monitor it very closely. Sometimes he often forgets sometimes who his audience is, especially with his newfound fame from this show. There are a lot of people sort of new to transit policy, and you'll drop an opinion, but we need a little more elaboration on why you feel the way that you do about certain things.
My Twitter feed is 90% transit deep cuts.
I would say I'd say subtweets, not yes, just deep cuts, like transit subtweets.
Your pinned tweet is just a list of all the metro stations by boarding, what people usually use for like a funny, like pithy thing. You just have a giant color-coded chart.
I'm about to update it too. Stay tuned.
Repin.
But I want to talk about a couple of things that Alyssa also will have a lot to say about. You quote tweeted a reference to the downtown LA streetcar. This is something that has been in the works for a really long time. They finally had an environmental review done, and they put out the details for it. This is a streetcar that would run along Hill and Broadway. Is that right?
It does kind of a elongated loop type thing, but it's kind of like a ladle. It's like a...
The Downtown News described it as a pipe stood on its end, which I thought was very nice.
It's kind of like a Broadway finger pointing, maybe.
Finger pointing.
It's like number one, like one of those like sponge things you wear at that.
Yeah.
So it would do like a loop, start at First Street, go down to 11th Street, and then go to like LA Live, and then loop around, come back up 7th, and then travel like Hill and Broadway, or is that the two? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. So
this has been discussed and in the works for like
so long.
What, 15 years at this point? 10 maybe? I don't know.
It's our archives,
over a decade.
The Curbed archives are deep. This is a deep archive I'm looking at right here. Yeah.
And they came out with the details and they said it'll cost $300 million.
Right.
For about 7,000 riders every weekday. Now this is alternate transportation. It's not cars. Scott says this thing should never get built. And then I think, oh, well, maybe because it's too expensive. And he says, I mean, to clarify, I don't care about the cost. Don't build this at any price. And so my question is, what will please you? This is master. It's everything that I would think you guys would like. And then I hear that, Alyssa, you also hate streetcars.
I wouldn't say I hate streetcars. I don't think this is the right thing we need to do at this moment in our lives of Los Angeles.
California. In Los Angeles or anywhere?
Well, there's
because I do want to quote, you say you don't, this is a great gotcha moment. I want more of these in the show. You say that you don't hate streetcars, and here I find an article on Gizmodo with your byline from only 2 years ago that says streetcars are the great urban gimmick of our time.
Receipts.
There's a very nuanced argument in that story if you read past the clickbait headline. But I think so. The big way that streetcars are sold to cities is that they are this economic engine. So it's about development and maybe revitalizing a part of the city that has been forgotten. And we're kind of past that in most major cities. Like I think there's some places where you can make a good argument, and there are places like Detroit that don't have really other many options, and a streetcar could actually get people around the downtown area. There has been one that recently opened in DC. It was a corridor that has gotten some development around it that was, and provided a connection for people. And there's been one proposed in Brooklyn. Same kind of thing. It would connect a bunch of places that don't have the best rail connections along Brooklyn, like Red Hook, these areas that you could probably take a bus or bike share, be the fastest way to get around. So there's these things proposed, but they always cost a lot of money, and there are successful ones. It's not like they're all bad, or there's Portland is a very good example. Portland, Oregon is of a successful one. There's many successful ones in Europe. It's not
one
like
in New Orleans that I've been on.
Well, yeah, I mean that one's adorable.
Portland is the one that kicked off a lot of the modern interest in building these things.
Yeah,
because it is successful and it works in tandem with their transit system rather than detracting from it, which is something that happens a lot other places. But yeah, that's one of the things that actually spurred a lot of cities to consider building these systems, and most of them have not had the success that Portland has.
It's like the two things are, if you were going to build it for development, that's great, but the argument for downtown LA is what more could even be built along this route? Like no big burst of investment, or even it's everything is being built
fully.
It's like the most built up corridor probably in the city. And the other thing is the speeds at which some of these roll are so slow that you could actually walk faster than the train in some situations. Definitely bike, and this is a very bikeable area of downtown as well. So you do have to think about, and I think this route has 23 stops.
Yep. Basically one per block.
Basically one per block. So it'd be stopping like every block to pick people up. Those are the two things that are most heavily criticized. But then you just have to think, like, who is this for?
Mm-hmm.
How much is it going to cost? Who's going to be using it to get around?
Basically, why are we doing this?
Why are we doing this? And we wouldn't even get the money. This would get some measure of money. We wouldn't even get that till after 2050. That doesn't even mean groundbreaking. That means we get the money. So we'd have to somehow fast track this, which is should not be fast tracked because there's great transit connections already there. It's not like a transit desert. And then there's some really good ideas on Curbed that Bianca Berrigan wrote up where we could have these really cool, like trendy, fun buses if you wanted to make it like a, you know, the TMZ type tour that goes in this loop in downtown.
Wait, that's the pitch?
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, you know, people want to ride those buses to get around because that you get like, you know, celebrity gossip along the way. But you could do like a cultural type theme bus. Yeah. You could use one of these cool double decker buses, like a sightseeing bus.
That reminds me, I forgot, they used to have trivia on LA Metro buses.
That's right. There was Transit TV. Yeah. Did you win it? Did you ever win that?
No, and I can't believe I never won. I used to take it to work. I really can't. I used to take it to work every day. I would always send in an answer. I don't understand how many other people are doing this. The prize was always like a DVD.
Yeah, you would get, and people would win because there'd be names that came up on Transit TV.
I just wanted to see my name on it.
Well, maybe they could have that as part of this, not a streetcar.
That's just for downtown. That does a loop. That's fun.
Because
it's like a party. Because
what is it for? Bus. I mean, I mean, maybe you subtweeted this too, but like, what is a streetcar for in downtown if, you know, if not just for tourists or people who want to get to LA Live or to their hotel? I don't know.
Let's talk a little bit about this project because this is something that is at this point being championed almost exclusively by council member Jose Huizar, who is on most issues pretty great. He I think has a deeply vested interest in
hashtag bringing back Broadway.
I was just bringing back he may just want to bring back Broadway. Broadway. You never know.
but when we're talking about this project, this is something that local property owners in downtown voted to fund a couple of years ago, 5-6 years ago, using a property tax assessment district. So they are putting up something like $60 or $80 million of their own money.
Wow.
Over the course of however many years. So that is what they've said. We want to build this because we want to resuscitate the downtown area. We think that the property value increases will be worth paying a little bit extra in taxes to have this thing built. But at the end of the day, what we're talking about is a one-way loop around downtown that, so you can take it from, let's say Grand Central Market to LA Live, but you've got to go the long way basically.
Wow.
As a transit project, it has a lot of really obvious flaws. It's a 3.5 mile one-way loop. And the document that was just released the other day says that the operating time for this 3.5 mile loop would be, they really try to obscure this as much as possible, 40 minutes. So that is an average speed of 5.5 miles an hour. As Alyssa was saying, you are definitely in some situations better just...
And if you're taking the long route...
Oh, yeah.
Then right. You
well, and also, since walk. We... Then since this is Los Angeles, we don't let things with rails have priority. So, obviously, we're going to let cars go by at every light. God. Or, you know, it could be even longer.
They actually said that they looked at having an exclusive lane for the train on Broadway and then decided that it would be too inconvenient for cars. So, it's like nobody's really invested enough in this idea to make it even somewhat workable, so we probably just shouldn't do it. For Huizar's part, he has actually said that now it's $300 million now. When it started, the property tax increase was supposed to cover all of it. So it was supposed to be $60 to $80 million. Then they came back and said, oh, actually, it's like $180 million. And Jose Huizar said, no, that's just the contingency. That's like a worst case scenario. That was like four or five years ago. So then they came back and they were like, actually, it's $250 million. Now it's $300 million. The project is not getting better in the meantime.
I mean, the problem, too, when you look at these streetcar projects is it looks like something from the 80s. And no one has ever made, I mean, if it works, if it does what it's supposed to do, I guess I don't care what my trains look like. But there's nothing that is going to improve upon it design wise. And not
well, it might cycle back around. It'll be, yeah. I mean, 35 be, years from now.
I mean, yeah, that's knows? True. Who it'll knows? Be the with this. You know,
and
the
then imagine what you know downtown could be in decline, and then and really need this so to then, come
yeah,
back.
The development the money will come back. Okay, at just well, the right time.
And how much is $300 million going to be worth? And
that's
and,
true.
And,
so we should plan ahead
it's
for
be like
the,
$10.
We today. Should plan ahead for the bringing back Broadway. Again. Okay.
Why? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, why not just do so many cities, so many American cities right now are doing the same kind of thing with autonomous buses. They're on the roads now. There are these cute little ones in Vegas and Detroit has one and Austin, all these places. So there are touristy routes that are being served by these autonomous buses. And, you know, that it's kind of gimmicky and fun and whatever, but it probably only costs, they'd probably come do it for free because they'd want people to get on in their autonomous buses. And then the other big thing is just like, let more buses have dedicated lanes rather than tearing up the street and putting a rail down. Just like, let's do the best ever pilot of a dedicated lane bus and show what can be achieved through that and use it in other parts of the city.
There was another thing I saw on Scott's Twitter that I did understand, and it was crazy to me. Metro came out with their next-gen, #next-gen, bus study.
This is just a slide from it. They haven't released the full thing yet.
They released one slide?
I mean, they're doing like internal presentations about it.
And it leaked?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. And they basically said what they their expectations for the bus system going forward. And this is what Scott has to say about it. Some uninspiring stuff here, colon. Metro thinks the ceiling for transit is 13% of trips, even if it's much faster than driving. Their goal is a little less than 2 times the time it takes to drive for a bus, just bus only.
For any transit trip.
Any transit. And they're okay with 5% mode share on transit. So they're okay with 5% of trips being on bus or rail.
5% of trips in the county being taken on public transportation.
Which what is it now?
Is actually, I think, lower than it is now. Yeah. It's probably about what it is. I mean, the ridership has fallen a lot in the past couple of years, so it might be below that now, but it's been historically like 6 or 7%.
That's all very bleak. Yeah. Metro seems like a very self-hating organization.
They don't aim high, I don't think. I mean, it's hard to be somebody who is deeply invested in the notion that public transportation is one of the like best public goods that is available and should be like fundamentally offered by a city, and also
and we should be driving people like towards it.
Well,
yeah,
not driving. You shouldn't.
We should be
steering.
Yeah, no, not steering.
Guiding.
No.
<That's> not but yeah, it's hard to think that, and also see sort of like the actions taken by Southern California's largest transit provider as being not somewhat defeatist and like just deflating to people that might otherwise be interested in riding transit. The slide that I put up on my Twitter that I found via Bryn Lindblad of the
Climate Resolve,
that's right. It basically says that what they think is no matter how fast a transit trip is, no matter how much better it is at serving them than a single occupancy vehicle, that the vast majority of individuals would choose a car instead, which I think is not true.
I don't think it's true either. And in other cities, that hasn't proven to be
exactly,
true.
Exactly. What they have said here is that the average, and not actually, not even the average, but the overwhelming majority of transit trips do take more than twice as long as making the exact same point-to-point trip in a car.
Yeah, but that doesn't take into account things like parking. I mean, that it's, I guess you'd be comparing it to... That's the kind of thing that makes me upset, because we never include that real time and cost about parking. Or if even if you're getting like Lyft or Uber, it's often the wait times are longer than
they
you
say.
Think. Yeah. And then bothers me. Yeah. And then you've got to pay on top of that. You know, it's like there's all these hidden costs and everything. It's just
every other organization, every other business fudges the numbers to the advantage of their service. So it's crazy to me that an organization like Metro wouldn't include something like parking, how long it takes to drive around and find a place to park on average when they're measuring how long a trip is.
It seems like it's kind of reflective of the essentially organizational standpoint that Metro has, which is they are a large agency that is comprised of a lot of people like elsewhere in Southern California who just drive everywhere. And I think don't necessarily think about those hidden, inbuilt extra costs and extra time costs of driving everywhere. And that is very sad, frankly.
They should be inspiring people. I thought they did a good job with Superkind, the Superkind ad campaign I enjoyed. They should aspire to be a cool organization that people want to...
I think there's a lot. I mean, I will say I think the design, some of the design things they're doing, like your rider campaign. There's a lot of experience things that are trying to get improved, and the buses especially. Although you could argue this new bus that they debuted at the board meeting, it has things like USB ports and Wi-Fi, and you know, maybe those things make a difference for people. Whatever, dedicated lanes would be better than any single thing that we could talk about or add to a bus or transit, bringing transit TV trivia back. But I also think that there's another big study out this week by Bruce Schaller about, you know, another big study about like the impact of TNCs, Uber and Lyft type companies, and that they're increasing congestion, and that, you know, they're taking trips away from transit. And you look at this, you know, these studies just keep coming out about where people think that this is the thing that's bringing down transit. And then you look at, like we just talked about, like how many people are going to take bus or rail ever in a big city that's not someplace like New York. You know, it's like 6%, whatever. And then you look at how many people are taking TNC trips, and it's like the number of trips is like 1.5 to 2% of the, you know, so we're really talking about like really small amounts. And then you look at the chart from like trips of people getting around last year in like major cities that have rail, and like 73% of the trips are people in private cars driving their cars around. So we're talking about like really minuscule things, and ridership information is just doesn't, we just great. Like let people take the stuff. It's great. Like let's focus on the car issue. Like let's just chill out about all this other stuff and like focus on the car issue and how to get people out of their cars.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that we should be worrying about.
There was a debate this week for the election for sheriff, which we've talked about the sheriff's department a lot the last couple of weeks. We talked about the cliques in the department. This debate, so this election for sheriff was supposed to be a walk. There's an incumbent, Jim McDonnell, who took over for Lee Baca, who ended up being convicted of a number of crimes. And Jim McDonnell took office. He was the Long Beach Police Department chief. Mm-hmm. He took office in 2014.
Previously, prior to that, he was in the LAPD for 28 years.
And Charlie Beck demoted him. No one really knows why. And so Jim McDonnell effectively quit, went to Long Beach, and then got elected sheriff in 2014.
Yep.
This election was not supposed to be competitive, but then he got a challenger, Well, if it was going to be competitive, it was going to be against this guy, Bob Lindsay. He's in the sheriff's department, right?
Yeah, and he had actually more money than Jim McDonald did. He raised a ton of money.
Yeah.
So almost $1 million in donations. He was really popular within the department, and he did not really get traction in the race. Who did was Alex Villanueva, who was a retired former sheriff's deputy, I believe a lieutenant in the department, who had almost no money, but he got the Democratic Party endorsement, possibly benefited a bit from the higher than expected turnout among Democrats in this particular primary election.
Yep.
Did very well among Latinos. And he actually came away with 33% of the vote, forced a runoff for, I think, the fourth or fifth time in the past 100 years.
Yeah.
According to Maya Lau, our previous guest.
Yes. And he has sort of cast himself as a reformer compared to Jim McDonald, who has now been part of, not only on the job, but part of the sheriff's department for only 4 years.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, you watched the debate, Scott.
Yeah.
What kind of stood out to you about the difference between these two guys?
So what's interesting about this is that this debate was privately held. It was at LAPD headquarters, and it was hosted jointly by the Professional Peace Officers Association, which is a union that includes most of the uniformed LA Sheriff's Department officers, and the League of Women Voters, and the Contract Cities Association. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting crowd, though. It seemed at times like it was relatively hostile to Jim McDonald.
Hmm.
But I think that really is the story of this debate, is that Villanueva came out and was essentially saying Jim McDonald, who is the first sheriff of the LA County Sheriff's Department in 100 years to not have risen up within the ranks of the Sheriff's Department,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't know the Sheriff's Department and doesn't like the Sheriff's Department, and things that he's been doing have been lowering morale there. So he is kind of saying that McDonald's type of reform is actually leading to the kind of low morale that causes mass retirements and causes good people not to want to work for the sheriff's department.
Because they are losing numbers, right?
Yeah. At one point in the debate, Villanueva said that the line, this image is great. He was saying that where people actually go to turn in their retirement paperwork, the line is out the door and around the corner because they just can't stand working for McDonald, who is apparently a micromanager who doesn't have faith in the department. But at the same time, he's actually saying McDonald is sort of a continuation of, he's trying to paint McDonald as a continuation of the Baca era scandals that the department has seen. Uh-huh. One of the things that he said actually ties in with what our previous guest, James Sexton, told us, which is that a lot of the people who were working directly under Paul Tanaka, former undersheriff, now incarcerated. They're still working directly under Jim McDonald. And James Sexton told us that he believed that McDonald needed more time to figure out who it was among his executive level staff were not serving him well.
Yeah.
But what Villanueva was saying was that everybody knows who these guys are.
Yeah. James Sexton kind of said that too, but he just needed more time to get rid of those guys, I guess.
Yeah. So Villanueva was saying everybody knows who these guys are, and McDonald's just not going to do anything about it, basically. Hmm. So in the backdrop of all of this, we have a very large debate about policing happening in LA and in the country more broadly. But just outside the LAPD headquarters, while this was going on, ICE out of LA, the ICE out of LA coalition, and Indelon, the National Day Laborers Organizing Network, were holding a protest. They've repeatedly protested Jim McDonald for basically what they say is the continuance of sheriff's department policies that collaborate with ICE beyond the scope of what they're supposed to be doing under the sanctuary state law SB 54 that was passed.
And some got in, right? And were
actually disrupted, yelling
at them during the
and said that the sheriff's department handed over 1,000 prisoners to ICE last year. McDonald said that that was true, but he said that those were all handled basically as stipulated by SB 54.
And like certain crimes, like violent crimes.
Yes, yeah. that was what McDonald said. He also said it was 1,000 out of 116,000 prisoners that came through. And so they
got to ask their question. They got to
this person just sort of started shouting him down during the middle and was eventually escorted out by security. It got pretty tense at points,
but he just responded to what the heckler was
saying. He actually did directly address her. Yes.
Wow.
Just the fact that it was like a private debate, I feel like I have never experienced even that kind. Like, how did they controlled who the guest list was, and there you would just couldn't sign up to go? And
I feel like you had to be part of one of the three groups hosting it.
So
I think it was a member of
League of Women. Okay, so
which that makes it extra interesting that the crowd was anti-McDonald, because probably the majority of the people there were involved in the sheriff's department.
I do believe that's the case. Yes, I think that they were mostly law enforcement officers. Yeah. So yes, that was an interesting, it does seem like his staff, there's a fair amount of division there within the ranks, so to speak. They did speak about the cliques briefly. Mm-hmm. This was very similar to the discussions that we've had on this show previously. A fair amount of discussion about whether or not being part of a clique, being tattooed, possibly being part of a sheriff's gang meant that you were, unable to do your civic duty as an officer well. And it seemed like both of the candidates had, to me, kind of wishy-washy answers of like, some of the best officers that I know have been part of these groups, and also some of them are really bad, and you know that they're
this is the thing that Alex Villanueva is doing, where he's trying to walk this weird line where he says Jim McDonald doesn't understand the department, but also he's just continuing to do what Lee Baca did. Jim McDonald has people in his upper level staff who are members of these cliques, which are bad, but lots of deputies who are in these cliques are good.
Yep.
It's like where you have to appeal to the voters, who many of whom want reform in the sheriff's department, and the deputies at the same time, especially the deputies in the crowd. I don't know. It's a lot like what was going on with Michael Moore in that press conference about Melita Curado.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably 70% of what he's worried about is he's a new chief. He doesn't want his force to turn on him.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that Villanueva really is playing a lot to the deputies. For somebody that I had mostly heard about in terms of being a potential reformer,
that surprised me too.
He really strongly is playing to, and maybe that was just the crowd given the audience there, but that was very much what I took away from this.
So when do we vote on that?
November.
Okay, so that one can be November. Okay, all right.
Yes, just that one is track. Allowed to be all right, November.
Just that one.
Is
in motion.
Let's prop lock and drop it.
Ah, yes.
Mm.
Real fast. We're on to prop 3.
We did
1 and 2. We scratched 9.
Right.
Now we're on 3.
I wanted to do something with like indecent proposal, but then
indecent proposal,
except it's proposition.
Proposal.
Didn't work. So we're on prop 3, which is another bond.
A water bond.
This one's a water bond. So we talked a little bit about bonds a couple weeks ago with props 1 and 2. Bonds are basically just debt where the government is saying we want to be able to spend infrastructure now and spend infrastructure money now and pay for it later, which is a reasonable thing to do considering infrastructure projects last for a very long time and benefit people for a very long time. So this one specifically is $8.9 billion, and it's going to be paid back over the course of 40 years, and it is all about water infrastructure. We have just hundreds of millions of dollars that could be given in grant aid to local governments for upgrades to water infrastructure. For instance, the kind of things like where in LA we were seeing water mains bursting all over the place.
Okay, so this falls into that category where like every couple months you see pictures of like Bel Air is flooded out, yeah, or like Golden Road Brewery, I remember, was like underwater from a break because our pipes are 150 years old.
What's interesting about this particular proposal is that what's interesting about this particular proposition is that about half of the money is reserved for what they call disadvantaged communities, where the area median income is less than 80% of the state average income. So this year, that means like communities where the average household has less than $50,000 available to them.
Okay.
So for instance, your Bel Airs would not qualify for that. However, lots of places across LA would. I would say the vast majority of LA is,
yep,
is disadvantaged in terms of statewide area income.
And the Bel Airs, those communities could get a lot of money from this because there's like $300 million towards replacing lawns. Right?
That is true.
That, yes, paying people to replace their lawns.
Yep.
Which is a program the city has done for a while, but I guess they think it's, yeah, successful.
And an increased subsidy for people to replace turf, replace lawns, replace high water usage appliances like toilets.
Mm-hmm.
There's also stuff for desalination in there, wastewater treatment and recycling.
And to fix the Oroville Dam.
Yes. So this is where it gets kind of interesting, because all of the stuff that we just mentioned only covers like less than a quarter of what the bond is actually totaling. And most of the remainder of that money is going towards a lot of basically just conservation groups in the northern part of the state. It goes towards wetland and wildlife preserve.
Huh.
Reclamation projects, but it has a lot of support, like a huge amount of support in the Central Valley, and on up all the way to the topmost part of Northern California, because a lot of this money is being basically given over directly to wetlands and wildlife refuges up there.
I did a little research on this. I saw that part of the money was going, $200 million was going towards fixing the Oroville Dam, which like broke open last year.
Yep.
I thought that FEMA was maybe going to pay for that, but then I read this money is in case FEMA decides to not pay for it.
Oh, interesting.
Which seems like something of a disincentive for this administration to, yeah, hear like, oh, you just passed a bond that allocates this money already? Yeah, go ahead and spend that money that you already got from...
Right.
From this bond.
You're getting nothing from,
yes,
from the federal government.
No one is against this bill, officially. The biggest proponent of it I saw is a group called Ducks Unlimited.
I loved that. Yes, Ducks Unlimited.
Sounds a little scary. I want some limit on ducks.
A cap. Duck cap.
There's a huge amount of support for this. As I said, pretty much anyone in the northern part of the state is supporting it. Feinstein, even John Cox, Republican,
wow,
candidate for governor, is an endorser of this bond.
Because the Central Valley wants it so,
yes,
much.
It does. It does provide money to agribusiness, so he is fully on board.
Which, I mean, it just shows, I guess, how dire our water problems are in this state.
Yeah.
That it's something that every politician,
yeah,
I agree on.
And as far as LA is concerned, I'm again a yes on Prop 3, specifically because of the like things like infrastructure upgrades and wastewater treatment that we can get out of this. There is not a ton in here for LA, but then again, we also get a lot of our water from the north.
Yeah.
So we have an incentive to make sure that... we're protecting the California landscape. We got to do our part, I suppose.
Cool. Prop 3, Alyssa?
I mean, yeah, I think same thing. Water infrastructure is in trouble. If you take a tour of it, you'll be scared. I'm interested in the turf removal, lawn removal thing, because I disagree a little bit with the way that the city did it during the mega drought that we...
How?
I think it needs to be complemented with tree planting efforts instead of just telling people to take their lawns out. Because remember, there was that turf terminators situation where they recommended this business that basically dumps a bunch of gravel on your front yard and then like leaves and everything dies in your yard that was already planted there, and they walked away with like tons of money. So I'm curious to see how that will be
definitely
controlled this time, or the incentives. And trees need to be a big part of it. Trees are also a big part of, you know, stormwater absorption in cities and making sure that when we have mudslides and, you know, flooding, that we don't lose our land.
I think that's a really good point. And I worry about that too, because there's, I don't think that there's much definition in here. It sounds like the kind of thing where it could just be like the state is literally just handing the money to cities to extend their existing programs. So yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, because I think that program ended, like they ran out of money. It was a DWP program, so it's done. But honestly, this time I'd just rather see them plant trees than turf removal. Like, let's just plant, I don't know, a million trees.
The mascot really sucked for that program as well.
Save the Drop?
I hate the Drop.
Wait.
I like the Drop.
I like Save the Drop.
He's drawn in this way that is not cute at all. He's barely anthropomorphized. Have you seen
there was like a real life one too. Did you ever see him at events?
No, I don't want to. I don't want to see that thing.
Barely anthropomorphized.
Like in three dimensions. It looks like shit.
Especially because he's only ever popping up to say he's disappointed in you.
Yeah, yes. It's always...
But he has no mouth to communicate this. He just has eyes that always look the same. He can't emote. It's a terrible mascot. It should be cute.
That's fair.
I support this as well because you guys do. And for the ducks.
For unlimited ducks.
That's it. We'll be back next week without Alyssa. Alyssa, safe travels.
Thank you. I'll miss you.
We'll hold it down while you're gone.
All right.
Bye.